before we dive into today's trend on the Affordable Care Act, here's a roundup of today's top local and regional news. The Evansville City Council voted unanimously this week to oppose the legislative measure that could lead to a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage in Indiana. Both the Democrat-controlled council and Republican Mayor Lloyd Winicky say the bill would discourage businesses from moving to the state. Legislators have passed the measure once and are scheduled to vote again during the upcoming session. If it passes a second time, voters would vote on the amendment in November. The Evansville-Vanderburgh School Board chose a new member. The board voted for Andrew Gorino to serve the remaining year of Sally Becker's term. Becker stepped down as the board president to move closer to her family. Gorino is a retired school administrator who has worked for both the EVSC and the Warwick County School Corporation. He served as principal, an assistant principal, and as a special education coordinator. The school board chose Gorino from six candidates. More Indiana school districts signed on to a lawsuit against the Federal Affordable Care Act. WNIN's John Gibson reports.
The Indiana Attorney General's Office has announced that 24 more school districts have joined in the lawsuit, including Gibson Southern. The state and 15 public school corporations, including Vincennes Community Schools, first announced plans to launch the suit against the Internal Revenue Service and other federal agencies 2 months ago. Attorney General Greg Zeller says the suit will try to stop school districts from facing unwanted fines. Attorney for the schools, Jim Hamilton, says it's the first time that 39 public schools have joined together in a single lawsuit against the IRS. He says the participation of Indiana public schools in the suit underscores what he calls the debilitating impact that the employer penalties are having upon public education. The Treasury Department, the Department of Labor, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services have also been named as defendants in the suit. John Gibson, WNIN News.
The Peoria, Illinois City Council began the process of determining how much it would cost to permanently dock the LST 325 along the Illinois River. Evansville leaders want to keep the World War II ship docked here, but they understand the ship's operators need to check out their options. Evansville officials met with the LST's board of directors last summer to begin renegotiating the city's contract. They plan to meet again soon. The federal government reported this week that nearly 3,500 Indiana residents chose a health insurance plan through the federally run online exchange during its first 2 months of operation. WNIN's John Gibson reports.
The latest figures from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services show 3,492 Hoosiers chose a health care plan between October 1st and November 30th. That's about five times the number who chose a plan during the Federal Exchange's first month of operation, which was hampered by computer glitches. The new numbers also show nearly 36,000 applications from Indiana were completed during the exchange's first 2 months, seeking coverage for nearly 70,000 people. Nearly 39,000 of those people have been found eligible to enroll in a plan through the exchange. The latest figures don't indicate how many Indiana residents selecting a health care plan have already started paying premiums. John Gibson, WNIN News.
That was your local and regional news. Now we are about to dive in today's trend on the Affordable Care Act.
Support comes in part from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students, junior, pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039. Coming up on The Trend, a conversation with three women who are navigating the new healthcare sign-up process. That's up next on The Trend.
I'm not ready for this to be ever. I don't know.
Support for The Trend comes from members of the local programming fund. I'm Cass Harrington, and we are following up on our Affordable Care Act discussion from a month or two ago, and before that, before the exchanges even opened. So this is our third segment. And when we started on this journey, it was kind of misty. We weren't exactly sure what to expect. And as we move forward, the exchanges opened online and we heard frustration from callers. We even had someone here from WNIN in the studio herself trying to enroll without much success. And finally, we have someone here today who has enrolled and will be able to talk about the savings to her healthcare coverage with that. But in this program, we're divvying it up in three segments. For the first part, we will talk to three women here with three very different takes on the Affordable Care Act. In the second segment, we will catch up, get an overview of what we've learned so far and what's ahead. And finally, we will hear from doctors to hear what's going on in the clinic in preparation for an influx of patients. But for now, right now, I am joined by three women. Rebecca Oates, who is our fundraising officer WNIN. Hello, Rebecca. Thanks for joining me again. She is 24 years old and healthy, I would say. I ran a half marathon with you. And I'm also here with Donna Kineska. She is 56 years old. And we will talk to her in a second. She just looked at her plans last night. This is really great. And finally, I'm here with Vanita Hupper, who is 60 years old and a self-employed piano instructor. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for coming on The Trend. Now, what is so fascinating to me is seemingly you would say three women attempting to sign up for healthcare. But really, the experiences you've had are very vastly different. Rebecca, I would like to start with you, since you were on, if we want to say, ACA 2, the second trend on the Affordable Care Act. You tried to log on and enroll in the studio. Bring the listeners up to speed. Tell us what happened.
Sure. I went on to enroll and set up an account and simply just learn my options under the new healthcare system and if I was going to get a subsidy and all, how much my premiums were going to be and what kind of plans were available to me and that kind of thing. And I never actually finished signing up. I never actually got an account. I was able to use some other features on the site to come up with a general idea of what my premium will be, and then use another feature to come up with a general idea of what my subsidies would be for the entire year. And with that information, I kind of made my own decision based on where I lived and how old I was and that I'm not a smoker. They took all that information into account, and then I compared it with my own stuff at home. So
yeah. And what did you eventually decide after, because I assume you did eventually look at what you were offered?
Yeah. I think it was going to be about $200 once I got my subsidies. It was going to be about $200 a month on the other or on the affordable healthcare plan. And I'm still on my parents' health insurance because I'm only 24. So, and my birthday isn't until June. Mm-hmm. So I still have a year and a half that I can take that advantage of that plan. And being someone pretty fresh out of college, and I've been in the workforce for about a year and a half now, I'm still paying student loans and stuff like that. And so it's really advantageous for me to just stay on my parents' health insurance plan for now, since I can do that until I'm 26, because it doesn't cost them anything more to have me on their mm-hmm. plan. Since they have so many children on there already, taking me off isn't going to save them any money. They're going to pay the exact same amount of money as if I did. And so I pay all my doctor bills and everything like that.
Well, you said something really interesting in that segment. You said this was something that it's fine. I mean, it's in your consciousness, really, for mm-hmm. for the first time you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, did you learn anything?
I did. I learned just through talks with my parents and through the research to educate myself about the new healthcare system. I learned really what all it takes to have healthcare. I learned better what premiums are and deductibles and what all I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. Because, I pay my bills now, but my mom just says, hey, your dentist bill was $35. They didn't cover all of your filling or mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. So can you get me that? Because I've already paid it for you. And so, I mean, I help out my parents in that way, but I really didn't know before this all that really goes into paying health insurance and mm-hmm. taking care of that kind of stuff.
And that's a big part of this, is not only are people getting covered or otherwise not going on this mm-hmm. plan, it's just people are becoming responsible, are taking ownership of their health care, which is almost a cultural change, really. So I'm also here right now with Vanita Hupper, and I understand you actually kind of got to circumnavigate all those glitches, and you enrolled, was it before October? How did that work?
No, actually, I just enrolled yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. How did that happen?
But I started the okay, I'm going to back up a little bit.
Okay.
I'm 60 years old, and I'm healthy, and for about the last 3 years, I have been self-employed and purchasing my own insurance. And so for that period of time, I have been dealing with an insurance agent, which is one thing I would recommend people consider if they're trying to navigate this new world.
And it's free, right?
Yes. Okay. I asked some questions in that regard yesterday just to be sure. And yes, it is. And I guess I feel a little bit about that the same way as maybe you don't do your own taxes because you want somebody who supposedly you would expect would know more about it than you.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that for me, it's been a very easy process because I relied on this agency that I already trusted and had worked with in the past. And because of my income level, which is fairly low, I will be so much better off under the new plan that it still is sort of blowing my mind.
Yeah, tell me about that. So you had previously been on your own insurance, and the premium was outrageous.
Well, it was for me the largest single monthly expense that I had.
Wow.
But I was able to navigate that, and I made the choice to be insured because I just wasn't willing to risk having no medical insurance. I do understand that some people just cannot afford the premiums under the plan, the options that we had before and some of the options that we'll have going into the future. I was only able to afford what I would call a catastrophic plan, which is very different than what a lot of people have with their employer. So even though it helped me some, I would have still lost a lot of money if something big would have happened to me. If I would have been in a car accident or needed surgery, I would have still paid a lot out of pocket. But for me, that was a form of insurance that I could afford. And my experience with self-employed people is that's usually the kind of insurance that they have.
Yeah. Well, tell us the difference now in the plan under the Affordable Care Act. How much are you going to save?
My premium will go down by about
80%.
80%. And my coverage will be better. Because basically the government, as I understand it, probably the American taxpayer, is going to be subsidizing my insurance based on my income level. And I realize that, or I think I realize that the downside to this is that somebody is going to probably have to pay more than they're paying now.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I have mixed feelings. I am a pretty independent person, and I've always worked hard, and I think I have this somewhat American ideal that I will take care of myself. And so, you know, I don't like to think that I'm like on the handout, so to speak, which I realize in a way now that I am. But on the other hand, I'm 60 years old, and I have worked hard all my life. I've had some circumstances in my life that I didn't foresee that were out of my control that put me in the place with no advance warning at age 50 to have to provide for myself. And that is not an easy place either for a 50-year-old woman to be in who had managed the home and taken care of the family. So I consider myself very fortunate and blessed by God to have good health, because for me, that is worth more than anything you could put a price tag on. If I got sick and had to spend $10,000 in a calendar year, not only would I have $10,000 less, I would be sick. So I do try to stay healthy, and I'm thankful that I am healthy. And honestly, until this happened, I suspect, like again, like a lot of people in my age bracket, kind of waiting to be 65 in some ways, which is kind of sad.
For Medicare.
Yeah, because I knew that when I got to be 65, I would have what you might call real insurance. It's not a perfect product either, and it won't pay for everything either, but it would have been better than what I had.
That's a very telling story. Well, and Donna, your experience has been interesting as well. I understand you actually logged on to a website last night called thehealthsherpa.com, which for those of you who may not know, it's a very concise, very user-friendly website for looking at health insurance options, and you actually don't have to enroll. It's kind of like Kaiser, but just very, for me, I'm a big design person. It's visually appealing. So, Vanita, when you looked online, I'm sorry, Donna, when you looked online, what were you able to see as far as plans?
I saw several plans. The least expensive would be the bronze, so that's the one I looked at. My current situation is I was an independent contractor, therefore got my own insurance, and I continued that. And what I found was the Affordable Health Care Act premium was going to be substantially larger than what I'm paying right now. A lot of the features were the same. It was the premium that was a lot larger. The downside to that is that the insurance that I currently have has a much larger out-of-pocket or deductible that I would have to pay. So right now, my monthly budget does not allow me to pay the premium for the Affordable Health Care Act.
And what about quality? I mean, is that something you've also looked in comparison?
I have. The quality, I believe, would be the same. I'm not so worried. I could keep my same doctors. They do pay for more prescriptions than I have now, but the Affordable Health Care Act formulary, which I looked through, does not cover two of my prescriptions, which out of pocket is over $10,000 a year.
Wow, for prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. Two.
That's incredible. And I understand you have Crohn's disease.
Yes.
And so, I mean, does your current plan, I mean, is that the quality of coverage, does that assist you, I mean, well enough for your needs? Or would Obamacare have, I don't know, better implications for that?
Not particularly that prescription. All of the ones that are generic are covered by both.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm running the risk right now because the out-of-pocket is larger for my current insurance that if I am hospitalized, I'd have to pay more out of pocket than with the Affordable Health Care Act. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I can't afford the monthly premium currently of the Affordable Health Care Act, so I'm willing to risk the possible out of pocket.
Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting demographic because, you know, there is, I don't know if it's going to shift into a two-tier system where there's an assistance for one group and then others are paying a lot more. But, I mean, there's also a group of people kind of in the middle who, I mean, they just can't afford. And it'll be interesting to see if the Affordable Care Act kind of evolves to meet that middle other group, if you will.
Because in my situation, I am not eligible for a subsidy.
Wow. But Vanita, your situation has
And I think
been...
the word that you just used, evolved, is important because I think that we will, I hope, that we will continue to see this new thing evolve. I don't mean to ever say that I, first of all, even understand it or that I think it's fair for everyone the way it is now. You know, I wish that Donna had still the freedom to make more choices for if she's willing to assume that risk of a higher deductible, which is the place I have been in for the last 3 or 4 years. That was the only thing I could afford, and that was a risk that I lived with.
Hmm.
And that's the risk that I live with, is the large deductible. Even with the Affordable Health Care Act, there's what I consider a large deductible. It's just less.
Well, this is still the very beginning for the Affordable Care Act. We will see those the coverage begin in just a few weeks, and we'll still be covering this. But ladies, thank you so much for sharing your experience with me, your stories. That was Rebecca Oates and Donna Koneska and Vanita Halper. Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM. Coming up next, WNIN's John Gibson talked with a health coverage navigator, and we'll bring in our ACA correspondent, Kevin Valderis, from the University of Southern Indiana. That's up next on The Trend.
You're listening to The Trend here on WNIN. We were just listening in on three women with three very different takes on healthcare.gov and their experience with the Affordable Care Act. And now back in the studio, I welcome my ACA correspondent, Kevin Valderis. He's the director of the Public Health Administration Program at USI. I think that's the fastest I've ever said your title.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back, Cash.
Well, Kevin, there's going to be two things to kind of accomplish here in this segment. First, we're going to come back up to speed since our last conversation. A lot has happened.
Yeah.
We're going to listen in on a conversation with a health navigator, and then we're going to go point by point healthcare.gov a couple of the statements they're making online.
Okay.
So to start, since you were in here last, you just heard we had Rebecca Oates in here trying to sign up. The key word of that week was glitches.
Right.
I think we heard that way too much. I shouldn't even say it anymore. It's been beaten over the head. So now the website's been combed out. People are enrolling. In fact, you heard in the headlines 3,500 here in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what now? What else has been going on that people may not be aware of?
I think, you know, what's really important and interesting to know is that there's lots of different things happening. And so certainly the focus in the month of October and November has been on the individual marketplace and the healthcare.gov website. At the same time, states have been states that are expanding Medicaid are enrolling individuals, or perhaps some individuals who are signing up through the federal exchange or figuring out federal or their state exchange, like Kentucky, they're figuring out that they do qualify for Medicaid instead. But, you know, all kinds of things are happening. So I think insurance plans obviously have let some employees or individuals know that we're dropping your coverage. It's a dynamic environment, ripe for the political process. But this is, in a sense, how healthcare or health insurance works actually without the Affordable Care Act at all. So individuals, policies change, especially this time of year, sort of November, October, November, December is open enrollment period. And some employers drop coverage, add coverage. Insurance companies do the same thing. But there's a heightened awareness across the world. I was reading about it from a different perspective in The Economist, a British publication that focuses on world issues. And, of course, headlines are about the Affordable Care Act. So it's big news around the world because it's real. But as your previous guests suggested, it's not a case study. It's not theoretical. It's real life.
It's real, and it's happening.
It's real life, and it's happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, to show what's been going on here in Evansville, we have a clip from WNIN's newest addition to the newsroom, John Gibson. He went to Echo here in Evansville and spoke with a navigator. Let's listen in on that.
I'm speaking with Wyeth Hatfield here at the Echo Health Center. Well, can you tell us, just generally, a lot of folks may not be familiar with Echo, what do you folks do in the community?
Well, we provide primary health care to individuals who are uninsured, underinsured, and homeless. We try to make the health care affordable, accessible, and appropriate. That's our mission.
Now, I understand that ECHO is also a navigator for the Affordable Care Act. Can you tell us what all that entails?
Well, what that is related certification and licensure with both the federal government and the state, and as an organization, and also the individual staff who are able to help folks with understanding and applying for the different forms of affordable health care insurance.
Yes. Now, any idea on how many folks have come through? How many folks you've helped so far with the ACA?
It depends, of course, on how you define the different numbers, but by the end of November, I think we've assisted over 1,000 people.
That's good. Now, of course, we've all heard about the computer problems that occurred early on when the exchange went live in October. The Obama administration says the exchange is working much better now. Is that what you've seen?
Well, yeah, the navigators, we've seen the computer portal work better and better each week that's gone by. Last week, it was actually at its peak, and we were able to assist people with getting completely through and enrolling. This week, a couple of new glitches have popped up. So it's kind of an off and on. It gets better, two steps forward, a step back kind of deal.
I see. So how has ECHO dealt with those glitches, especially the early ones? I mean, did you just have to postpone some enrollments?
Well, early on, we gave people the option of either coming back or filling out the paper applications. We filled out a lot of paper applications with people. And so they were able to get that going, and there have been some challenges with that. So some people that have filled out initial paper applications have been back to try to reapply electronically now that system's working again, yeah. Up and working.
Yeah. Now, at this point, I'm sure you're expecting a lot more folks to come in and attempt to enroll?
We are. It's been pretty constant since the beginning. We have a hotline number, and it's got 20 to 30 calls a day. We have three staff who all of their job is towards this. In particular, the other staff that are certified do other things. But the three that do nothing but the enrollments, their schedules are booked out a week ahead of time, at least, and have been the whole time.
Okay. Well, what advice do you have for folks who are uninsured at this point, and what do you suggest they do?
Well, they definitely want to explore their options. There are different phone numbers. You can look on the internet at the Health and Human Services website. That's the best thing to do in terms of signing up. It's probably a good idea to make sure that you're using the federal portal or getting some assistance from somebody that knows what they're doing, because there are some forms of tax credit help and things that make the insurance cheaper, and you can only get that if you go through the federal portal. If you go through insurance companies directly, then you may lose out on those forms of assistance.
So there are some assistance programs for folks, I guess, low income, mm-hmm. That kind of thing?
There really are two main forms of assistance. There is the tax credit that helps to pay the premium. That means that the amount that you pay monthly for your premium will be reduced. You'll get assistance with paying the monthly premium. And then the other form is the cost share reduction. And what that does is it decreases the amount overall that you pay out of pocket, the deductible and the copay and et cetera.
I see. Now, have any of your clients suggested that maybe they'd rather pay the penalty? I believe it's like a $92 penalty instead of enrolling in the ACA. Is that a problem, or is that something you've seen?
Well, occasionally a person will say that. And for the first year, that's a very feasible thing, because the penalty is reduced for the first couple of years. The first year, it'll be, just little. The second year, it'll go up, and then by the third year, it'll be full scale. So by the third year, you know, depending on your situation, you could actually be paying a couple $1,000 penalty.
Yeah, I see. Well, anything else to add that we haven't touched on here regarding the ACA or ECHO?
Well, overall, I'd say, you know, it has been a challenging time. There are pluses and there are minuses with the whole thing. But the staff that we have here at ECHO, they're dedicated, caring people, and you can get help from our navigators, even if you're not an ECHO patient. And if you'd like to speak with a navigator or just meet with them in person, we have them working in the clinic. And we've also partnered with the Evansville Vandenberg Public Library and have people stationed there. So if you're interested, you can call our hotline number and leave a message, your contact information, which is 812-436-0211. And somebody will call you back and set an appointment.
So ECHO can help out even if you're not an ECHO patient.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mr. Hatfield, I certainly appreciate you chatting with us here. We will help spread the word, and thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was my colleague, John Gibson, talking to Wyatt Hatfield at ECHO here in Evansville. And I'm now joined by Kevin Valadares from USI, the public health specialist, ACA correspondent. And wow, Kevin, it sounds like ECHO has been very busy signing people up. We heard nearly 1,000 people here in Evansville, 3,500 in Indiana. And nationally, the latest number I saw was 365,000. Yeah, 365,000. And Obama had set kind of a goal for 2014, 7 million people enrolled. So that includes actually Medicaid. Currently, right, we have about a million people who are eligible now for coverage in 2014.
Right.
That's, I mean, a far cry from 7 million.
Right. It sure is. And I think, you know, the number is naturally going to grow. You know, 7 million is, I think, a target number. It wasn't honestly just set randomly. It was a number that was sort of pre-calculated in terms of how to balance the cost of the Affordable Care Act as it sort of phased in. Even though January 2014 is a crucial date because that's when insurance programs start in January and all of these kick in, you know, this is really phased in over the next 4 years. Yeah. And so it's not just a one-time target date. And so, you know, insurance coverage will expand statewide. Not all states, though. As we know, that only about half the states in the country have chosen to expand Medicaid, so it will not expand in Florida or Texas. And although individuals still might receive coverage through the federal exchange.
Mm-hmm. And with that expansion of Medicaid, hospitals are actually going to benefit from that because they will be paid more for those services.
Right. So they will, it'll actually be all providers. So when we say, I use the term providers, that's healthcare lingo. Meaning anybody who provides services. It could be an entity like a hospital or physicians, like the two doctors you're going to have on the show.
That's right.
Soon. So this is my part of my correspondent duties, Cass. I'm trying to be a correspondent here. But so the individuals and healthcare institutions, providers, are going to be paid what perhaps in the past, certainly hospitals have been dealing with what's called self-pay individuals who don't have insurance or inadequate coverage. And so Medicaid reimbursement is better. Now, for providers, they'll be able to give you, I think, a probably a much more realistic scenario. Medicaid reimbursement for providers, for physicians, is poor. I mean, it is just not good. And so across the board, across the country, and so the federal government has decided through the ACA to raise the rates to Medicare rates, at least for the next few years. So that's a positive thing.
And briefly, what about this talk about mental health coverage or substance abuse? I know that that's been expanded and widely claimed on the new healthcare.gov website.
Right. So one of the big things about the ACA is how the federal government has set a list of basic benefits. You can find that on the 10 benefits, basic benefits packages. Mental health, substance abuse, maternity care is all part of it. And there's literally 10 different things. This is a big deal for the mental health industry as well, because the issue of parity, which is parity is equity and equality, mainly equity. It has never been compared to the medical system, never been, it's been fairly unequal. And so this basic benefits is a huge win. Now, it depends on what side you're looking at it from. But extra services that perhaps individual plans don't cover right now will be part of it. So for some individuals, they are going to be paying for services that they don't use. Yeah. Now, that's how the general
Like maternity coverage, for example. And
correct.
I've heard from women who are no longer able to have children, and they're complaining that that's included in their coverage.
Right. And I would say the same thing for me. I mean, there's not really a great chance in the near future I will be using maternity coverage.
I would hope not, Kevin.
Right. Thank you. That's an NPR joke, I think. But it is part of a basic benefits package. I will say that you cannot sort of provide coverage to the masses without perhaps excluding individuals who might not want to pay. So that's the rationale for all these new services.
Well, we're going to hear in the next segment how all of this is going to affect doctors, the one providing that health care in the clinic. But first, just a quick break. That was Kevin Valadares, the director of the Public Health Administration Program at USI. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Cass.
Support comes in part from Raven Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Raven offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at raventire.com. Coming up next on The Trend, a conversation with two local physicians on what they think will happen when they actually start seeing patients under the new exchanges next month. That's up next on The Trend.
We've reached the third and final segment of today's Trend on the Affordable Care Act, and I am so thrilled that this is happening because the first show that I put together on the Affordable Care Act, I really struggled to find local physicians who could come on the program and talk about it. I think part of it was apprehension because we didn't really know what to expect. It was before the marketplace has opened, and but finally, yes, we are here, and we know at least a little more precisely what's ahead and who has enrolled, and particularly how this will affect primary care physicians. But right now, I am joined by Dr. Paul Perry, who is the president of Tri-State Orthopedic Surgeons here in Evansville. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Perry.
Cass, thank you for having me.
And we also have Dr. Zahid Saqib, who made a drive from Carmi, Illinois, to come and join us today to talk about his primary care practice. Thank you so much for coming on today's program. And
thanks for having me.
And making the drive. So I wanted to incorporate multiple voices from the clinic because, I mean, it's crystal clear to you, not all doctors feel the same way about this. It, you know, determining factors are what they practice, where they live, where they practice. There are many different things that come into play and how they're affected. So briefly, for the listeners, I'd like to hear, Dr. Perry, your clinic, the type of patients you see, and maybe some kind of immediate changes that you are making right now.
Sure. I think there's three things. First of all, I'd like to really highlight that we don't know. Physicians don't know exactly how all this is going to impact them.
But that's so key because, I mean, it could, I mean, I think you are one of the largest groups that is most affected in your work, your livelihood.
Well, there's no question that we're going to be impacted. And I think because there's uncertainty, then there's fear and how do we position ourselves? But there's really three things that we've seen. You know, we talk about the coming influx of patients, but because there's not only fear amongst providers, there's fear in the public. And so I've seen this year in our practice, we have 20 providers. we've seen a huge influx of people coming to see us because they don't know what 2014 is going to be like.
So they're coming in before the end of the year, kind of scrambling before their coverage changes?
Correct. So we've already seen what I would call a very significant blip in our business, if you will, or the patient visits, elective surgeries, things that people maybe were putting off mm-hmm. or saying, I'll take care of that sometime down the road. Well, that time is now because they have fear. And whether that's justified or not, unlikely it's not justified, but still that's the psyche of the healthcare debate and all the things that are happening in the media that brings patients to see us. So that's the first thing. The second thing we've done is we are going to see not only this immediate impact, but as more and more people come with insurance. And I would like to point out something maybe not everybody understands is not only is there the healthcare exchanges, but there's Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And in the state of Indiana, that's not happening right now. And that's maybe for a different show why that's not happening right now.
There are dozens of shows that could come out of this.
So because that's not happening right now, this sort of tidal wave is going to be delayed. So it's more like something we'll be able to see coming. But having mm-hmm. said that, our practice is hiring physicians. But more significantly, we're also hiring what I call mid-level providers, which for the layperson means nurse practitioner or physician's assistant. And those are people who can act as our eyes and ears, who help deliver care to patients who are very...
And how many have you hired to prepare for this?
We've tripled the number of those that we've had. We've gone from...
Tripled just this year?
In the last, how about, year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there's not... It's not one-to-one in our practice. In other words, mm-hmm. there's not one for every physician, but we have... we have so many, I can't give you the exact count, but maybe 10 or 12 for a practice of 20, so, with the thought that maybe we'll even need more than that as things go on. Let me just jump in one more thing.
Sure.
And then, of course, the law made us, the law created some requirements for us to automate our information technologies, and so we've had to add computers and technology and things like that mm-hmm. too.
Well, I wanted to hear from Dr. Saqib. He has a very different patient population in Carmi. Actually, the population of that town is 5,000?
Approximately 5,000 with the county of about 15,000.
So. And you started practicing there in 1979.
Yes, that's correct.
So what sorts of problems do you see as far as a rural patient base?
I think there's what the rural patient base is basically, and most of my patients are elderly and children. The younger people, since we do not have a lot of industry, do not stay in Carmi, so they try to get out as soon as they can. I have not seen an influx of patients, but I've seen a concern about my patients that whether they would be able to see me or not, whether they would be able to get the same, you know, health care or not, whether it's going to be possible for them to get the specialist care and all of these things. And unfortunately, there is a lot of misinformation, what they call Affordable Care Act, but if you talk to them about Affordable Care Act, they would say, what is that? It's known as Obamacare. So from the first of this year, everything that has happened, somebody's premium got jacked up. They said, oh, that's Obamacare for you. Somebody's prescription medication did not get filled. Oh, that's Obamacare for you.
So it's almost kind of a mythic
Yeah, so
thing.
It's just like one of those situations to where. So I think that in any program that is as big as this, there are going to be things that have to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to have to hire more personnel as well?
I think that I would have to just go by, because mine is a very unique individual practice, and I do not have a support of a big hospital or a big group. So I'll have to be careful to what I can hire and what I can support. And mm-hmm. as far as that goes, so I'm going to take it by the ear and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But I think that with all of the people that are going to be put into those things, especially with the expansion of Medicaid in Illinois, very different from Indiana, mm-hmm. that I am going to see an influx of patients. And I do have a physician assistant right now. and I might have to hire another one. But I think that in the next few years, I think there would be a need for at least another one.
Certainly. And well, and another kind of interesting thing about rural communities is it's more prominent to see patients with preventable illnesses, often like obesity, hypertension. But with more patients coming to your clinic, will you be focusing more on preventative care, or does that change how you interact with patients at all?
Well, primary care these days is, at least half of it is preventive care. So, which is a good part, because I think most of these things will be covered under Obamacare, which is basically the mammograms, pap smears, things like annual checkups and things like that. So which would be beneficial for the patients, and that would hopefully benefit them. I don't think that my practice is going to be any different than what it is now, mm-hmm. but maybe that I would be able to do more of that, because there is going to be they would be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Dr. Perry, I have to ask you, what do you think is missing from this legislation? You know, you've spent 20 years in the field, is that right?
That's right.
So I'm sure you've developed in your own mind what you think should be in there that has a better concern for what's going on in the clinic, what doctors see.
Well, yeah, there's the thing about the legislation is that it's so far-reaching, beyond insurance exchanges, beyond Medicaid expansion, to all facets of healthcare, how the hospital operates. So, you know, if I had to summarize that answer that and summarize it, I would say, we have the goal of this was to have a market-based solution to the problem, which I respect that. But it's so regulated that it's not really a market-based solution to the extent it could be. There's a lot of restraints. There's a lot of restrictions. You know, a good example of that for all of us who live here in the Evansville area is the women's hospital at Deaconess was built as a partnership between physicians and the hospital. Under the ACA, physicians are now banned from any form or sort of hospital ownership. That's not free market. So there's a lot of things, you know, I think we have this for good. I wouldn't sit here and make an argument that somehow we can go backwards. We can't. But we can make it better, and we should. And I think physicians all are hoping for the best that way, and we want to participate in that. Because ultimately, care is delivered between the physician and the patient. That's where care happens. And all of the rest of it should focus or point towards mm-hmm. that.
Well, it seems, you know, this is still very, obviously very early. And I think the biggest thing was just getting those people covered, bringing them into the clinic, and then the details will be ironed out as we go along. Dr. Saqib, you bring a very interesting perspective to this conversation. A very global perspective, which I really am curious to hear about. I know you are from Pakistan originally, which is a third world country, which has a starkly different healthcare situation, but also you have family that practices in Canada. So I wonder, stepping back from where we are right now, even from stepping back outside of the United States, what does this look like to the rest of the world?
See, with the medical care in Pakistan is so rudimentary that I can even not remotely compare it with the one of the best systems in the world, which we have here.
You think this one of the best systems?
One of
the
best
world?
Systems that I know of. But at the same time, when I look at it and say, if 30 to 40 million people of our population cannot afford health care and they can go bankrupt, so I think that there was a change that was needed. We have different models. There are models that are in Europe, and some of those models are just such that there is really no freedom. And I think that we had to come up with a hybrid program to where it would be market-based as well as some support from the government. And I think that probably is going to be the best model that is. So the closest that we come is in Canada. So if you have money and you can buy extra insurance, you can buy extra insurance and get the best care anywhere in the world that you want to. And that would be available to us too. But at least the basic care would be taken care of, which is what is happening in Canada. So I have a family that is a surgeon, and he is pretty satisfied, and he thinks that it's a good system because he works good hours, and he has good benefits. And then I have another one that is a family physician, and she is kind of overworked. But at the same time, she would not want to trade for something else. So I think that physicians and patients do adjust to their to the changes. And I think that if you look at it overall, I think the insurance companies are also dictating to us what we could prescribe, what we could order, and what could we do. So there's not going to be a tremendous change. And the change was already coming. There was a time that we could prescribe anything that we wanted to, that we could do any test that we wanted to, which we cannot do now, even before Obamacare. So I think that changes because as a country, we could not afford that much to be spent on medical care, and especially with the growing population and the Medicare that we have, there has to be a certain amount.
Great. Well, I think it's an interesting perspective, especially after all of the frustration and griping, honestly, that comparatively, we're okay. We're more than okay.
I think that with changes coming, it would be good.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Perry, final thoughts from your end to you. Is this going to help you, hurt you? How is this going to affect you?
No, I mean, to echo Dr. Saqib's comments, that the more people that have health insurance, the better. I mean, the better it is for our patients, the better it is for us. So that's a good thing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand, we only have one exchange now in the state. I like to see it be better than that. I think Kentucky seems like they're doing a good job with their exchanges. That might be a good model for what Indiana can do.
Certainly. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this segment. That was Dr. Zahid Saqib from Carmi, Illinois. Thank you for making the drive over. Dr. Paul Perry. And we are at the end of today's Trend on the Affordable Care Act. In just a few weeks, coverage begins for the nearly 1 million Americans covered by the Affordable Care Act. As we've heard in this segment, that likely means new patients will be visiting the doctor, and primary care physicians in particular will have to double their efforts, whether that means hiring more assistants or expanding their practice to cover more preventative care. Doctors have been the least represented voices in these conversations about healthcare, but as we've heard, this is still the beginning, so we will continue to look for those voices in this story to help you stay informed. If you are curious about a person or project mentioned on today's show, you can check them out at our website, WNIN.org, and you can also find a playlist that it was on this show. I'm your host, Cass Harrington. Thank you for listening. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from John Gibson, the newest addition to WNIN News. Steve Berger engineered today's program, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.